You're listening to heritageradionetwork.org. This is a live recording from the Roger Smith Cookbook Conference.
Hi, this is Leah Eden with heritageradionetwork.org. We are, of course, at the Roger Smith Hotel for the Roger Smith Cookbook Conference. And I am very privileged to be sitting down with Dr. Lucy Long here today. She is a panelist at the conference. And, of course, the director of Food and Culture. I would first love to hear you describe what it is that you do there. Tell us a little bit about your work with that nonprofit.
Okay. The Center for Food and Culture is something that I actually started, and it is meant to provide a networking clearinghouse on information about food from all different aspects. Our website, which is not running nearly as smoothly as I would like, however, the idea on it is to get people to think outside the box a little bit. So I'm not trying to recreate all the information or to provide an encyclopedia of food on my website, but I can point people to other resources. There's so many people who are working in different areas of food, and they're not aware that someone else is doing something, you know, slightly similar, so they could collaborate. Or also, food is just such a huge topic, so that it's just not possible for one individual or one discipline to really get a full perspective on it. So I think we need to have as many different voices coming in on issues. So I do come out of the humanities, out of folklore and sociolinguistics, cultural anthropology. So I do take a humanities perspective to food there. So I do not make any statements on nutrition. However, I can point out what some of the issues are that people are dealing with and give people an idea of where to go to try to find some reliable resources.
Mm-hmm. I think that is so fantastic because, you know, I've seen over and over people just with such passion about getting involved in the food community and the food world in different ways and either not knowing where to begin or beginning something wonderful and then realizing that someone else is already working on something wonderful. What have you seen the response to the center? I mean, have you been able to see collaboration start to take place, or what are some of the interesting relationships that you've seen built from that?
Well, so far the center is actually fairly young, and this is something that I started with my own. Or actually, I have to say my children's money.
So, I'm sure they're more than supportive.
So, and it's something that I started seeing a need for this because I was in academia for 25 years, but I also worked a lot in what we refer to as public sector, with museums, with educational institutions, with festivals, both educational festivals and just fun festivals. And then I'm also a bit of an activist myself, too. So I started seeing that people didn't speak to each other. People in academia tended to, we were too busy grading papers to actually talk to people who were out there working in the fields, literally. And then similarly, people who were trying to keep a restaurant running, they didn't have time to sit around and think about the implications of their menu and how that menu was creating an image of a culture. Mm-hmm. You know, so we really needed to be respectful of different perspectives, but also find ways to bring them in. So that's part of what I was trying to do with my center. I also was developing a food studies program through an American Culture Studies program at Bowling Green State University. Unfortunately, and I feel like I can say this, the higher-ups, the administration there, they said that food was too narrow a topic. They didn't see that it would be a viable course of study, and since the recession had a huge impact on Ohio and Michigan, We lost a lot of money in the university system, so they had to focus on programs that were directly helping students to get jobs, and they didn't see that food studies would do that. Unfortunately, now food studies is the newest emerging discipline, and everyone's excited about it. I've been reading papers on food since the mid-1980s, and now I go to conferences on Appalachian studies or you know, ethnomusicology, and there are papers on food.
Right. Well, that's kind of shocking for me to hear. My first year at the master's program in food studies at NYU. And so from my perspective, the area around food is just kind of blowing up in terms of the interest, the passion, the kind of work that people are doing.
You know, and part of it is Americans tend to think in terms of things being categories that are standalone categories. And part of the whole idea of food is that it is interwoven into all aspects of our lives. So you can get at it from so many different directions. And to really understand it, you have to recognize all these different directions.
Right. And yet that can also be seen as sometimes of a challenge, because people are interested in so many different pieces of it, or people are kind of, as you mentioned, working in their own silos. How do you see people starting to try to kind of break those silos and start to try to maybe work together or cross some of those bridges within the food world?
Well, there's actually an association, the Association for the Study of Food and Society, and this was there are some other organizations in which food was recognized. The American Folklore Society. Mm-hmm. Always had food panels at their meetings. But a lot of people from a lot of different disciplines started getting together in the early 1990s and having conferences. This was the Association for the Study of Food and Society. Mm-hmm. A lot of the people that today are seen as the founders are still very connected to that organization. And it's very collegial. You know, we all had to kind of fight for where we are. And because food wasn't recognized as a serious subject for scholarly study, mm-hmm. we really had to think through the justifications for it. I think it actually is kind of healthy that we did, because we had to think in terms of practical justifications as well as academic scholarly justifications. So I worked a lot on how can we use food to teach cultural concepts? You know, how can we teach history through food? Because people didn't want to study food, they wanted to study history.
Right.
So that actually is a very, very useful exercise. And I think a lot of us developed a lot of humility because of that. Because we saw that as individuals we couldn't do it all. So I'd say that really characterizes the foundation of food studies. So that's part of the reason I wanted to have my center, too, is that there are people who are coming into the field now who don't realize that there's kind of a heritage of scholarship, and that it's a very collegial approach to scholarship, mm-hmm. which you frequently do not find in academia. That's something that we really fight to hold on to.
Yeah. And I think that's a really valid point. You know, there's so much conversation around food. It's part of this public conversation, and people are talking about it as this new issue, this new food movement, this new food studies. And I think there is value, and it's important to kind of stop and recognize that, no, this is not the first time we've ever had these discussions, that there is a history, an academic history, an activist history, and that those people and those organizations that were part of that deserve, you know, to be part of the current conversation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think that makes sense.
Yes, yes. And then, you know, it's always helpful to have new perspectives, too. And because food is so huge. And everything changes, our economy changes, our culture is changing, so therefore our food is constantly changing. So we need to be open to new perspectives and fresh, you know, a fresh view of things.
Right.
So it's a very exciting field to be in.
I agree. Again, I'm here with Dr. Lucy Long. And, you know, one of the things that I've always been interested in looking at your career is your relationship with the Smithsonian, specifically the Folklife Festival. I'm from the Washington, D.C. area, and so I'm familiar with them. I was wondering if you'd tell us a little bit about your relationship with them, both in the past as well as today.
Okay, the Smithsonian Institution puts on a festival every summer, the Festival of, actually now it's called just the Folklife Festival, is organized by the Office of Folklife and Cultural Heritage. This was started initially by the head of the Smithsonian as a way to bring the materials, the objects that were behind glass cases. He wanted to bring them out and make them come alive and bring them to the people. So it always had an educational foundation to it. It was really developed by academic folklorists who were trying to find ways to understand and then present the meanings mm-hmm. of these objects to people. And the idea was to help an audience understand what something would mean to people from that group, from that culture. So I actually first worked there in 1976. I was an undergraduate intern. I had no idea what was going on. I had no interest in food other than eating it. I was interested in the music and all. So ended up, because I had an internship there working in music, I was working there at the festival, and there were some folklorists who were demonstrating food and talking about food. I don't remember what kind of food it was, but I remember, oh, this is a different way to think about food. It's not just something to eat.
Mm-hmm.
So that actually got me thinking about it. And then I continued working at the Smithsonian off and on, usually doing things like presenting music. And there's nothing more satisfying than seeing an audience looking perplexed when someone else is playing music and explaining, well, this is how you know when the song ends. This is how you know how to clap. Or, you know, how loud to clap. And seeing that audience just kind of relax into the experience and come away nodding with appreciation and recognition that, oh, that's just going on. That's cool.
Huh.
So that captured me. So I think it's partly because I always felt that I have an Appalachian cultural background and Southern, and I always felt like my cultures were misunderstood. And it's so nice to have other people say, oh, that's cool,
right,
about your own culture. So I wanted to kind of share that.
Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. What role do you think food can play in creating that understanding there between cultures or between people?
Well, food is frequently thought of kind of, well, naively and simplistically as, you know, this is a way to explore a culture. So you eat tacos, then you know all you need to know about Mexico. So, and that can frequently backfire if you don't like the food. You know, you find the food disgusting, you know, then you tend to think of those people as disgusting. But if we understand food as something that is constructed by our culture, by our society, and by our own personal experiences, then we can see food as, this is something very, very flexible. The definition of what's edible, what can be food, is not something that's self-evident and natural. It comes out of our histories, out of our environments, out of our politics. And it also comes out of our own personal experiences, too. So if we start understanding food in that way, and then we approach someone else's food, then we can kind of work backwards and understand why eating dog or eating sea slugs. So I just saw some photographs of Chinese food that's considered exotic and disgusting. And so, but we can understand that, first of all, this is only exotic to us because we're not familiar with it.
Right.
The Jell-O salad that they serve at the salad bars in Ohio, where I live, is considered exotic to most New Yorkers.
And a little gross, if I can be honest.
Yes, and a little, especially when you put whipped cream. Well, not whipped cream, but dairy, the dairy cream stuff, the fake stuff. The
Miracle Whip.
Yeah.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. So, if we start recognizing that. It's our own personal experiences that are defining what is different for us. And then if we can understand food in that way, then we can start understanding another culture. We can see what their history is, what their environment is, and how all that has shaped that one dish that they're offering you.
Right. That's such a lovely way to think about kind of the power that food can have. But So,
yes.
Yeah. So, Dr. Long, thank you so very much for being with us here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Again, thank you so much for coming to the Roger Smith Cookbook Conference. It has been fantastic, and I hope you've been enjoying yourself as well.
Oh, yes. This is a wonderful conference. People have so many different backgrounds here, so it's really fun. We have academics and practitioners and writers and cooks. So it's a really nice mix.
That's a fantastic mix. Get everyone in the room and just start the conversation.
Yes.
Well, thank you so very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, iTunes, and Stitcher for more. Visit our website, HeritageRadioNetwork.org, for all of our 30-plus weekly podcasts. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.